the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, 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 it's the Tarncast, Tarncast, this is the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, the Tarncast.
We are recording. Take it away.
All right, it's the Tarncast. I'm Shannon, and we have Todd Robert Anderson here.
Hey, Shannon, thanks for having me back on your show.
Yeah, it's really glad. And surprise, Todd.
What?
Steve Oakes.
What?
He's our very special guest today.
Sound of sheep being pulled off of guy sitting right next to Todd.
Oh, my God. Why? I mean, Steve's a very good person and nice, but I thought... I keep thinking that this is going to be about me, and you. You have other people. Well, that's when you call me very special guest. That's
you are. You'll always be a very special guest, Todd. But Steve Oakes was available.
And I was actually when I got the call, I was invited here to talk about you.
It is about you.
I guess that's better as long as it's not like a critical, very critical. It's a positive thing, right?
It's neutral.
Neutral?
Yes, I'm supposed to. I'm not. Or else I look like a shill. I talk you up too much. I look like an ass kisser. And if I slam you, what kind of guest am I? So I have to.
So
stay
it's just like
right down
the
line. Right down the line.
Now, okay. Steve, I'm very curious about something.
Those are really effective glasses. I bet. You see that? Like that? They just go like those are really effective.
They are.
Dad, where am I there? I'm not.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't
it's
know.
Neutral.
All right, Shannon.
All right, Steve, you mentioned to me when I spoke to you earlier that your last name is a chosen name.
Yes, I chose it myself.
Explain, please.
All right, well, the last name, because listeners can't see my name tag, is Oakes, O-C-H-S.
Yes.
And
which is not pronounced Ochs.
Well, it frequently is.
Actually. I mean, people...
Yeah. Mistakenly, but yes. Oches.
Oaks.
I have a friend who's... His nickname for me is Oches.
That's what it's called. That's kind of a cool nickname.
Yeah, that is a cool nickname.
But anyway, well, here's what happened. So back in the 80s, I was working as a stand-up comedian.
Mm.
And I was using the name Steve O. Steve O, period. And this is before the other Steve O from Jackass.
Mm.
That guy stole your thunder, man.
He I didn't mind him taking the name, but he did my stapling my balls to the inside of my thigh bit.
Oh, did he?
And you had to take that out of your ass.
Yeah, I had to take it out of my ass.
Oh,
yeah. Though it does save me in staples, which is
yeah.
It's probably good for your balls, ultimately.
I never even thought of it, of course.
I mean, you put showmanship first.
But when I was just in the old days, I would drink water, and it was like one of my balls were like one of those cartoons where the guy gets shot up, you know, the water kind of sprays out of him like a fountain.
Now, I just have to interrupt for a second. Yeah. You were a stand-up in the 80s?
Yeah, late 80s.
Were you like 5? For the people that can't see Steve, he's a very handsome young man. So
oh, your timing is so
he's
good.
About to have a birthday.
I turn 60 next on June 7th. I turn on next Friday, next Thursday, next Friday. I turn 60.
What is your secret?
Radio is very smart for aging, making sure you're only in a situation where your voice is broadcast
but
and the rest is just hearsay.
You don't have a face for radio. It's not like that. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And so, anyway, go on with
Go on with the
Oches.
Steve Oches.
So I'm Steve O for a long period of time, and then I ended up switching from stand-up comedy to writing, and suddenly the O kind of felt strange. You know, like I think Steve Holland dropped Savage. He was Savage Steve Holland, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's like at a certain point, you know, not that I was ever writing at that level. I'm just saying that at a certain point, it felt gimmicky. It felt fun for a comic because if you're working on the road, you want something that's not just a name that'll sort of draw people's attention.
Yeah.
So then I thought, well, what sounds right? Now I've got this years of being, oh, by the way, my real last name doesn't even start with O. So... How do I add to that? Just Steve-O was a nickname, so I just kept it. So what do I do here? I've been Steve-O for a while. I can't just go back to my real name. Everybody will be confused because it doesn't start with O. So I thought Oakes. I went through a bunch of them.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought Oakes, Steve Oakes. That sort of has it's an easy rhythm to it, right? But then I thought O-A-K-S is a very waspy spelling. And you know, you've been very kind to my face since I got here, but it's certainly not waspy. So... So I thought, well, how do I name how do I keep Steve Oakes and name my Jewy face? And I went with OCHS, like Arthur Oakes from the Times. And
Jewy face is a phrase I find humorous.
Yeah, it is very funny.
My Jewy face.
My Jewy face.
So
that's the name of your
that's my first CD.
Autobiography.
Memoir.
It's my first album, but it's a photo album.
Oh, it's a photo album.
Actually, I'm one of the rare artists to release a photo album.
You should put it on cassette.
What was your aversion to your given name?
What's interesting is my given name, which I will give you, I'm not ashamed of my, and Julie uses it. So my wife uses my real name. She dumped her maiden name, took my real name, and I don't use it. So that's a strange thing.
So does she kind of feel like she's cheating on you with you? So
On a good night.
Good answer.
So what was the question? My real name.
My
real
name.
Okay, so now my real name has become actually very famous. I didn't know that somebody, it's a stupid name, and I didn't know anybody could become famous with it, but somebody actually became kind of legendary with it, though the spelling is a little different. My real last name is Winehouse.
Oh.
But it's W-E-I-N.
Yeah. So, but Amy Winehouse went out, and it sounds the same, and Amy Winehouse went out and, you know, made it like, and now I'm like, shit, I should have. I didn't know she was going to come do that.
She didn't get anywhere near 60, though.
Interesting point. I'm coming up on 60.
Yeah.
So maybe you got the right spelling.
Yeah, you got the right spelling for sure. Right.
And just dismissing the name completely. Maybe the whole idea.
Yeah.
Dump
like
the name.
Get rid of
oh, my
name.
God. Got to talk to Julie.
Tell her your last name is a Grim Reaper.
Excuse me for 1 second. Julie, yeah, it's me. Dump it. Dump the name. Get rid of the name.
Now, did you change your last name legally?
No. My name is still, my license still says Winehouse.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like in a way this is like an elaborate ruse that you're really in the witness protection program or something.
Oh, that makes sense. Like Simi Valley, yeah. I'll bet they're witness protection.
What do you mean I got to be a comic?
Wouldn't that be crazy? You got put in the witness protection program and you were like
forced into entertainment.
Forced into being a stand-up comic. Actually,
that's a really good idea.
Turn off the mic. Here, I'm going to register right now at the Writers Guild.
I like that. That's very good. So, you just didn't want to be Winehouse?
I didn't like the name. There's probably some deep rooted psychological
reasons. It's not because you had a bad childhood.
I had a reasonably good childhood. Yeah, I think overall it was a good childhood.
So it's just the name. It was an aesthetic thing.
I think so. I think ultimately I just didn't feel it. Just didn't feel like I didn't want to be the guy that walked on stage after, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Steve Winehouse." It just wasn't the name that felt like intro. Yeah.
Steve Oakes is a cooler sound.
Steve Oakes, and Steve O was real easy. It gave me like three killer opening jokes about my name, and then I could just.
I think I like Steve Oakes better than Steve O, but that's probably because of Jackass.
And also because it doesn't feel like.
Steve O sounds like a, if not the Jackass guy, sounds like a morning zoo radio.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And at a certain point, in, you know, from whatever, 86 to 94 or whatever the hell my tenure was as Steve-O, it felt right for most of that. Mm-hmm. But near the end of it, when I started thinking this thing is going to be on credits, because I switched to writing TV stuff, and I was going to like, I didn't think that I wanted Steve-O as the Chris, and now all of a sudden the aesthetic again changed. And I thought, that doesn't feel right.
At the same time, because you brought up the example of Steve Holland, and the only stuff I seek out from him is Savage. Steve Holland.
Right.
His trilogy.
Right.
You know his trilogy is Better Off Dead, One Crazy Summer.
Oh, okay.
And then How I Got Into College, the one that didn't have.
And he was also a cartoon showrunner. He had a show called Eek the Cat, I'm wrong. Do we have staff? But yeah, I think he was the guy that was the executive producer on that show was a guy I actually used to work for writing animation during that period.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I've seen.
Yeah, in fact, I think he might have been the voice of Eek.
Oh, well. Okay,
not
right.
Not only an animator, but the voice of Eek.
Yeah, he produces a lot of shows, right?
Like yeah,
cartoon
yeah.
shows.
Yeah.
He's been not SpongeBob though, right?
Nope.
No. But I've seen
this
his
is going
name
back. I don't know. This was back, like the. I think, oh God, it was either I think it was Fox had a Saturday morning block of cartoons, and I was writing something called Mad Jack the Pirate, and the guy who was the showrunner and was Mad Jack the Pirate worked with Darn Eek the Cat.
Okay. In his trilogy, the Savage Trilogy, what actor is consistent in all three as the same part in all three?
Is Cusack in all three?
Nope.
No, he's only in
two. Better Off Dead 1, Crazy Summer. Yeah. He did not do... He got mad at Steve Holland for some crazy reason, so he did not do How I Got Into College.
I don't know.
Taylor Negron as the mailman. He's a mailman.
Interesting.
A horrible mailman in every single movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. And he is the best part of the trailer for How I Got Into College. Because, you know, the kid's waiting with bated breath for the mail to come to find out if he got into any colleges. And Taylor Negron shows up. And he goes, the kid goes, did it come? Did it come? And he goes, yes. Congratulations, you may have already won $10 million. And nobody knows what that means anymore.
Right,
but
right.
It was the best joke ever. Did you see that movie?
Did you find him, by the way?
I found him, yeah.
Okay.
What is it that you wanted me to...
If he was the guy behind Eek the Cat.
Yes.
Okay, so it's the same guy.
Yeah, and Sabrina, the animated series, The New Adventures of...
Old Christine?
Oh.
No. But the internet hears. New Adventures of Beans Baxter.
Beans Baxter?
I don't know that one.
I can give you my Wi-Fi
stuff. Doesn't make it bad, by the way. Some really good cartoons just don't make it, you know, and they just disappear.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and
it's true about shows, too.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, I know. There's so many. Like, I still can't believe how long, what was that, Two and a Half Men. That show was on forever. I couldn't even get through one episode.
I know. Whenever somebody talks to me about their love of a Chuck Lorre property, that's when I check out.
You know what kills me about a lot of these sitcoms, a lot of that ilk, right, of sitcoms, is that I have a lot of trouble watching the three camera sitcom. I have a lot of trouble watching, you know.
Especially now. The old ones, I can do it.
Well, I don't like how the acting works, how the blocking works. I don't really. It just doesn't connect with me. However.
And the formulaic
comedic. Absolutely. A, B, and her little runner, and just, you know. But what bothers me about it, what is annoying about it, is the joke writing on these shows is sometimes, frequently, excellent.
Oh, really good.
Like, not really well, good joke. Yeah. So you're watching a show, almost everything about it kind of grates on you while you're watching it, and yet,
if you can get past
some of the jokes. I mean, these guys and women, they're for sure.
Well, people love Chuck Lorre shows. I mean, they're simple jokes and straightforward and really characters that people are. It's just, it's not my thing, but. You put James Burrows in the director's chair,
right,
and that changes a lot.
Right, like absolutely.
Working with him was amazing because he understands that medium, the multi-camera.
What did you work with him on?
Will and Grace.
Uh-huh.
The multi-camera thing, just watching him work, like, he knows exactly how to make it funny and not annoying.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And not, like, feel like a stilted sitcom.
Yeah.
And it's weird because, like, it takes... One take, like, he watches everyone do it. One take, he says something very specific to everybody afterwards, like one specific note that changes everything.
Wow!
And it's so economical, it's amazing how he communicates with people. It was bananas.
That's great.
Yeah,
people thought that I wanted to do that shitty part on that show because it was with Madonna, but that's not why. I really wanted to meet James Burrows.
Well, that would make sense, right?
Yeah,
you're not a dancer or a singer.
No, right? No. Or and I was never a 12-year-old girl, so I'm not. Yeah, I was never a Madonna person.
So you don't want to talk about that?
No, it's a bummer. I wish I had been. At least for a couple of days. So I could understand the Madonna thing.
Yeah, totally.
Did you meet Madonna?
Yeah, she rubbed her crotch on my thigh.
Was that?
I was in
that
a.
Part? Yeah. Like, is that part of the?
She didn't. It was a very strange week. Here are the highlights. I'll give you the highlights.
Okay.
So I get there, you know, I have scripted two lines, but they paid full guest star rate because it was somebody working with Madonna. They didn't want somebody.
You got the Madonna bump.
Or a freak or whatever. Yeah. So I get there. Security's incredibly beefed up. But I get to the table read, and we're all waiting for an hour. All of us. All the series regulars, all the guest stars, James Burrows, the network executive, all of them. Sitting there waiting for an hour for Madonna to fucking show up. Mm. She shows up in the door. Sorry I'm late, everybody. And everybody's like, oh, it's okay, Madonna, whatever.
It's okay, Madonna.
And she walks around the table, doesn't look at anybody or really acknowledge that anybody's there, comes right up to me and says, hi, I'm Madonna. And I went, hi, I'm Todd. That's James Burrows. Eric McCormick, Megan Mullally, like
whatever. You did that?
They're all very important people. And I'm not, I didn't say it. I was just like, oh, let me point you to these other people. And it was so confusing. And then after the first day, which was a pain in the neck, because every time I went through the door to go to my room, which I had a lot of downtime sitting waiting for my one dumb scene. Mm-hmm. So I would have to go through the get the ID out and all that, which is crazy. That never happens. You just walk in and out of the stage. But it was Madonna. But anyway, I was walking backstage on one of the rehearsal days, the first rehearsal day, and Eric McCormick is passing by, and I was like, hey. And he's like, hey, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. And I was like, of course. Why? Yeah. Yeah. My absolute pleasure.
And to do two lines.
Yeah, is there a rumor that I'm a get?
Yeah. Like, you're very welcome, first of all. Yeah. And then he's like, sort of confided in me. He's like, that craziest thing just happened. And I was like, what happened? He's like, well, I walked by Madonna. I said the same thing to Madonna I just said to you. Thank you for doing this. And she looked at me and said, who are you? And I went, I'm Eric McCormick. And she went,
television's Eric McCormick.
And she went, who? And he goes, I'm Will. I play Will on this show you're on called Will and Grace.
Wow.
Literally a year, 2 years went by, and then I wound up in an audition room with the same producers. Mm-hmm. Who had worked on a couple of the producers who were working on the show, and as soon as I walked through the door, all they wanted to do was kvetch about goddamn Madonna. Like, say everybody hated
her. Well, how did you find the girl?
Wow, that's
what was
two
the,
years
what was
later.
The outcome? What was the final outcome?
The outcome was it was fine. Actually, Megan Mullally she's the one who made it work.
I kind of have a little bit of a crush on Megan Mullally. There's a commercial where she's with her husband,
Nick Offerman,
and she's kind of all sexed up. That's what she's doing. She's trying to steam up the camera a little bit. I got to be honest, it came through a little. I got a little steamed up from Megan Mullally, which I didn't expect to have.
I've seen that commercial, and they do another one where they're dressed like in flannel or whatever.
I forget what
it's for.
It's for kids. I think it's for like DirecTV or something.
I think it is something like that. Yeah.
Have you guys seen...
Hot. She's kind of hot, isn't she?
Do you know what she's really sexy in is the second season of Party Down.
Party Down?
Oh, yes, she is.
Have you not seen Party Down? Oh, my God. This talk about short-lived things.
Okay.
Party Down is amazing.
Two seasons of it. That's all we got. The first season, Jane Lynch is the kind of the person that Megan Mullally... She left the show to do Glee, mm-hmm. so Megan Mullally took over the part. Mm-hmm. Jane Lynch was great, too, but Megan Mullally's thing was different. The thing they had in common is they were both oversharers. That was like sort of the comic bit of both.
What is the show about?
Well, the show's about a Los Angeles-based catering company. So each episode takes place at a different party. Mm-hmm. So the location's always different, which is what I thought was such a cool. I don't want to call it a gimmick, but it was just a smart thing to do. Workplace comedy, but the workplace is always a different place.
That's very smart.
And there's so much you can do with it. And then so Adam Scott is a failed actor who has to, you know, come back to a catering company.
He does the bartender. He's the bartender, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Lizzie Kaplan, who's the other sort of romantic lead, is an aspiring actress, you know, who they've
an aspiring failed actress.
Yeah, exactly. and their chemistry is unbelievable. And talk about a crush. I mean, I'm too old for Lizzie Kaplan, but the first time I laid eyes on her, I was like, she's amazing, right? But they're great and their chemistry's great. But then you have all these great supporting characters in Ken Marino's in it, in the first season, who's like he's a former fuck up, like recovered addict or whatever, and he's very serious about running this catering.
Is it his company or is he just like the captain?
He's the captain.
Okay.
Yeah. Because when there is an episode where like the boss comes in to check up on things, yeah, and he's like really ass kissy. Anyway,
charge of them all.
Martin Starr from Freaks and Geeks. Did you watch that
in
show?
Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Okay. I do watch it.
He's, oh my God, why am I blanking on his name in Silicon Valley?
I don't watch Silicon Valley because I don't have HBO, so I don't.
Oh, yeah, he's with the glasses. He's always long straight.
If you haven't seen Freaks and Geeks, by the way, I can't recommend a show more. Short-lived show.
Everybody in the world has.
I was resistant to it.
I've never seen it.
I was resistant to it. And then Colby wanted to watch it.
I think I'm generationally, I think I skipped over it somehow generally. Well, I don't know. That's not possible because all the people I know that are around my age love it. So
yeah, it's just a matter of if you say, okay, I'm going to give this thing a shot, I can pretty much guarantee that you'll love it. With the pilot, you'll love it. And then you'll watch all however one season of episodes are, and then you'll be mad that they canceled it, because it's really good.
Guilfoyle, that's who he is.
Oh, okay. Guilfoyle. I know exactly who Guilfoyle is. Got it.
Guilfoyle?
Yeah, that's Martin Starr in Silicon Valley.
Oh. When you said Guilfoyle, I thought of Paul Guilfoyle, the character actor. Who was on CSI, and I've not seen him since, I assume, because he's fucking rich and he doesn't have to work. But
I don't know. Last time you see somebody who's on CSI, that's suspect.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, there are some, like, you mean like Gary Rordan or whatever?
I don't know. Guy? Is he missing also?
No, he got in trouble because he was on heroin or something, and they found him in a car.
I think it's funny, actually, that he got in trouble, not because he was on heroin, because they found him.
They found him in his car.
Yeah. The trick is, if you're going to be on heroin, kids.
Yeah, well, it's weird.
Don't be found.
If cops find a black recognizable actor who's fucked up in his car, they're going to arrest him.
Right.
Because that's bragging rights.
Right.
You know?
Right. And heroin, do you get extra points for
that? Yeah, heroin. Yeah, I think
if he's just drunk. That's baseline points.
Yeah, that's no big deal.
That's when you plant shit.
That's right. You go, I'm going for the heroin points.
Unless it's Mel Gibson, and then you just take him in and let him yammer.
Yeah, you make sure you stay quiet so we can...
Turn on the tape recorder.
Yep.
Plan your retirement.
Are you excited to see Fat Man, Shannon?
Fat Man.
The new Christmas movie starring Mel Gibson as Santa Claus?
Oh, God. I think I saw a billboard for that. Did I drive by one? Yeah, no, I'm not going to see it.
I saw the news, you know, that he was playing this part, like Santa Claus. And I was like, well, one, that's dumb. But every single, it didn't matter what the outlet was, but all of his PR photos from current years, he looks insane.
Yeah,
he does.
They can't find one of Mel Gibson where he's just looks like a normal human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, that's just, you know, fake news. That's the media manipulating. I'm like, no. He has a PR firm that releases these photos to the press. They're choosing the insane Gibson
photo. Well, you know what I think it is? You know how he does those wild eyes? Same expression in the Lethal Weapon movies. He goes, Yeah, well, you know how they always say, if you keep making that face...
Oh, somebody slapped him on the back.
Somebody slapped him while he was making it, and now he's locked in.
That's right out of Savage Steve Holland's One Crazy Summer. The two girls are giving the faces, and they get smacked on the back, and their faces are stuck in weird positions.
That's what I'm talking about.
God damn it.
So Mel Gibson got whacked while he was
doing Lethal
Weapon 4. I wonder, since the pictures of him look so insane and, you know, unappealing, I wonder if, like, his PR firm just hates him, and so they're just like doing it on purpose. Like they have better pictures laying around, but
it's entirely possible.
He's a really hateable guy. Like I wouldn't see that movie because I don't celebrate Christmas or Mel Gibson.
But even if that's the case, we love you. If that is the case, and his PR firm, like, why wouldn't he then recognize that every single photo that he's seeing of himself on the internet about playing Santa Claus, he looks insane? Why wouldn't he call, fire the PR firm?
Insana Claus. Turn off the mic. Turn off the mic. Insana Claus.
Insana Claus. Insana Claus.
Oh, that's a good Christmas horror movie.
That's what I'm talking about. Turn off the mic. Actually, Register it up. Right. Here we go.
Yeah. That's just, and all it is a remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night. That's all it is.
Weren't there several Silent Night, Deadly Nights? Wasn't it, didn't they do all 8 nights of Hanukkah, which was ironic, just to be ironic?
Was there a Hanukkah horror movie?
No.
I know there's been Dybbuk movies, but I don't know about
No, that. I don't think there's a Hanukkah. There's 8 Crazy Nights, which was not good, but I wouldn't call it a horror
film. No, that's just Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there has been a horror movie. A Hanukkah horror movie.
No, I don't think Hanukkah horror. Turn off the mic.
That's a good one. There's been so many killer Santa Claus movies. Yeah. I don't know why.
Dreidel of Death.
Silent Night, Deadly Night was like not the first Santa Claus killer movie. There was so many more before it, including like an old Tales from the Crypt movie from the 60s. The one of them, I can't remember what it was called, like Christmas Evil or something like that, but it was an actual killer Santa Claus story in a movie. And then there was Don't Open Until Christmas, which was about a British movie about a bunch of Santa Clauses who were getting killed by
so they were the victims.
They were the victims.
Right.
But it was still like a Santa...
They leave them in their own bags?
Well, and the guy who was killing him was also dressed... It was a Santa Claus killing other Santa Clauses.
I bet that happens more often than we know.
I think it happens a lot.
Do you know, I was a Santa Claus. I was a shopping mall Santa Claus for a couple of years. Two different years.
Really?
Yep.
Did you have booze on your breath?
No.
Were you missing teeth?
But my knees smelled like poop. That's something they don't tell you in Santa Claus school.
Were you secretly staking out malls to rob them?
This was legitimately Santa. I needed a gig.
You weren't a bad Santa? You were a good Santa.
I was a mediocre Santa.
You were a neutral Santa.
I don't mean the quality of your performance.
I was going to say, because I think I really committed. Like, I was in Massapequa Mall. What was the name of the mall in Massapequa, Long Island? And there were two Santa Claus. The mall was like a quarter of a mile long. It was this really long mall. And they had a downstairs Santa Claus on one end, who was my best friend at that time. And I was the upstairs Santa Claus on the other end, a quarter mile away from the other mall, from the other Santa Claus. And so whenever we were asked, which happened frequently, who is the real Santa Claus, we would always say, he is. But I did commit, though, because I used the big Santa Claus voice. And I...
Wow, you totally sound like... Oh, that's good.
I did real Santa Claus voice, and yeah.
That gave me the creeps. Because Santa Claus gives me the creeps a little bit.
Well, being in Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is scary.
You know what? Kids were frequently frightened of Santa Claus. There was some really... I can't remember the details well enough to tell them
pants
for recording.
Smelled like poo because a lot of kids shat themselves.
Not because of me. That was just a coincidence. The shitty pants happened to arrive while I was the knee. But yeah, some kids like they really would come at you like in earnest. Some kids were just these like greedy little fucks that would just read down a list. Like some kids were just afraid and just wanted to say "I love you, Santa Claus," and get it. I cried a lot, like just emotionally. I really did. It was like really moving to be a Santa Claus.
Can I tell you my story about a Santa Claus who sat on my lap?
Now there's a story.
Yeah.
So
that's a whole different kind of movie.
Very early in my commercial career, I was at a callback for a holiday thing, and the joke was Santa Claus is sitting on a car salesman's lap or whatever. I can't remember, it was something like that. So he's sitting on like a Staples employee, some employee. So he's sitting on my lap saying all the stuff that he wants from my company.
Right.
And this giant man, and my leg is falling asleep because he's a giant. He has such a panic attack, stage fright, like, and he can't say his one line. Like, he can't get it out. He's so nervous and freaked out. And he's got literal flop. I've never seen anyone sweat this much. Like, this job meant everything to this poor man. And he looks like like real white beard. It's not like taped on. This guy looks like
goddamn. They went to the agency this guy that handles Santa Claus.
Looks like fucking Santa Claus. Yeah, and he's sitting on my lap sweating. And I'm pretty sure at a certain point he started crying. Because his eyes were bloodshot. He was in such a state. And that was one of the saddest days I've ever experienced. Oh. Because I'm holding him and I'm just trying to give him some warmth.
Some love.
You know, like, it's okay, don't worry about it.
What but was it, this for again? A commercial?
A car commercial or something. Oh my God. Yeah.
It was... that poor man.
Yeah, I felt so bad for him. And I'm not sure he was crying because there was already way too much sweat.
Yeah.
Just wet. Like, you wouldn't know if Elvis was crying.
Yeah, it's crying in the rain sort of deal. Yeah. So I don't know, but I'm pretty sure one of those drops of sweat sure looked like a tear.
Did you get through the commercial? Did it get done?
No, I never... that's the thing about... It was an audition.
Oh, it was an audition.
Oh, it was an audition.
It was a callback.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. Okay.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I didn't
book Todd, it. We're going to have you read with the Petrified Santa.
That's the thing about, you know, and I know too when so often it's because they like little redheaded kids and they want, they no one can possibly have a redheaded kid who doesn't also have red hair, which is not how recessive genes really work, but okay.
Right.
You know, and I always know when I'm in the room with a redheaded kid if I book the job or not. Like, that kid just booked this job. I'm going with him. But, conversely, when you're in the room with someone and they fucking tank it.
Right.
They don't look at the other actor at all, even.
You need to, like, team up with a redheaded kid. Like, you need, like, your go-to redheaded kid.
Well, they grow up so fast.
Ah, redheads.
Yeah. But I got on a show just because she had red hair and they were looking for a dad. And I
was, with red hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never change, Todd.
Yeah. Stay pale.
Stay pale.
Stay pale, my brother.
I think I just got my only job at all this year was a day on a Netflix show. And I'm pretty sure I got it. The kid is blonde, but I'm pretty sure that's light where hair. I got it. It's the pale skin.
Congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun. It's the upcoming season. I don't think it's going to be out till the fall. I don't know when the show drops, but it's Atypical.
Uh-huh.
It's the name of the show.
Okay.
And I'm a deadbeat dad.
All right.
Who's cool.
Redheaded kid?
No, blonde, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. You just said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just shot it?
A few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I can say anything more than that.
Okay.
But yeah, it was really fun. And I didn't work with the famous people on the show that I knew, which is Michael Rappaport and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
It's a new
Jennifer
show,
Jason
isn't it?
Leigh rocks.
No, this is the third or fourth season of it. Okay. I mean, it's a Netflix show, so they only do, 10 episodes or something at a time, and they drop them all at once.
8 to 10.
Yeah. So, and I was on, I think it's the third episode of the season, so they're going to be shooting through till the end of the summer. Part of me hopes they'll call me back, but I really was kind of a jerk, so I don't know if they're going to go back to the jerk well that often.
You were kind of a jerk, or the character was?
My character was a jerk. I was an angel.
You want to be careful.
I'm sure.
Differentiate.
I was an angel on set.
Mm-hmm. Where's the set?
It was a house in was it Pasadena or Altadena?
One of the great Dinas.
A lot of stuff I shoot is shot
out
in
the
Dinas.
They,
especially commercials, because all the houses out there are so cute.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like houses from other parts of the country.
Right.
So you shoot out there.
That's right, because they're not developments, right? There's like a lot of...
yeah. Well, I mean, there's different... Like, some blocks have all the same style house, but it's not West Coast style. It's Midwestern or East Coast.
Yeah, especially like Pasadena. It looks, reminds me more of like the East Coast. Because you don't see palm trees or anything.
Yeah. Except for the little old lady, it's just like the East Coast. But then you get... And there's palm trees.
Right.
So you get that lady who drives too fast and the palm trees. Nobody knows that song.
I know it. The little old lady from Pasadena. It's Beach Boys. Jan and Dean.
I do not know that song.
Sure. Go Granny Go.
And I saw the living member of Jan and Dean play in Pasadena.
Was it Jan or Dean?
I think it's Dean.
So it was Dean and the Dina.
Yeah, it's Dean and then
Dean down the Dina.
Yeah, in Pasadena. That's where
Dean,
I saw.
Yeah, Dean in Pasadena.
Dean in Pasadena. Yeah, that's where it was.
Yeah.
And
he had to do the song, and there he was.
Yeah, and he can't. He can't hit those notes.
He can't.
Nope. He had a great. The band he had was amazing, and they went back and forth between Jan and Dean, where on those songs he would sing leads.
Right.
And then they would do Beach Boys. Like, they went back and forth. Jan and Dean, Beach Boys. Jan and Dean, Beach Boys. Right. The whole thing. And when they did Beach Boys, he was just on backup vocals.
And that was better.
The Beach Boys were... they were a great cover band for Beach Boys. But when Dean had to sing...
Nope. So the Monkees did that. You know, any configuration you would get of the Monkees, you'd have to get all the Monkees songs. So, like, we saw Davy Jones at Disney World... and of course he has to sing all the Mickey Dolenz songs, and if you see Mickey Dolenz, who's coming up, I think he has a show coming up, a solo, he's gonna have to sing the Davy Jones song, so it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
if you're one half of the other.
Yeah, although the Monkees was all made up anyway, so.
But they really sang.
Yeah,
so
that's
the vocal parts.
Can they still sing?
Davy Jones is having alive. Davy Jones is having more problems.
He's gotten quiet, very quiet.
But I don't know if Mickey Dolenz. I don't know. My very
two
very
of them friend, are dead, or is just one of them?
No,
dead?
Only one of no two of them dead because Peter Tork died just a few months ago.
Yeah,
yeah. Just a few
so
months.
So we only got two Monkees.
You got Michael Nesmith,
and we got two Beatles.
Yeah. I think McCartney could use the boost.
He sure could use the dough.
Yeah. We looked it up the other just by sheer coincidence because there was somebody talking. Oh, we were listening to Joan Rivers on Sirius shitting on Heather Mills, basically, is what the routine was.
Oh, wow.
And so we got curious. And apparently, like, McCartney, she was talking about how Heather Mills got like $500 million in her divorce from Paul McCartney, which is not true. She got
$50 million.
Yes, $48 million. But he's worth about $2 billion right now.
Yeah.
Because he makes, if you think about the math, he makes about $2 million
a night. $2 billion. When people say that, I've never understood that.
Yeah.
When you're worth $2 billion, what does that mean? You have like $2 billion in cash.
He has $2 billion.
He
has a net worth of $2 billion. So it could be mansions and yachts. I know if you're doing your full. Worth, you would, if you owned a home, you would add that home. If you own whatever, when you're assessing your entire net worth, you have all of your valued possessions in there as well. So whatever the vast McCartney, what surprises me, and maybe he's doing this quietly, but what surprises me is that a guy like McCartney would have $2 billion and not have given away $1 billion of it, because he's big in vegan and he's big in animal causes, and he's a guy with a great deal of conscience. He took a lot of acid. All of those things add up to charitability.
Mm-hmm.
But he still has $200 billion worth of stuff, even though
he has $2 billion.
$2 billion
maybe he is donating some privately. Who knows?
Yeah, I assume he's got to be doing something.
I would think, especially because
I have not
his first wife.
Any checks.
She died of breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I would think that would be,
it is another cause, of course.
But I could see him being
maybe he didn't like
quiet
her.
About maybe what
yeah. didn't like her.
Well,
so actually, that's what Joan Rivers' bit was about Heather Mills. She was like $500 million. I'll whack off a leg for $500 million.
Oh, Joan, she was so great.
Yeah, no, she went on with it. It was really oh, funny.
That's really funny.
Oh my God, Joan Rivers, I miss her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was just listening to this bit because once again goes back to jokes. I love jokes, and you know, she had jokes. A couple of joke writers that she had. There's a guy named Larry Amoros, who I see sometimes on Facebook, who was a joke writer who was like a really good joke writer, really funny guy. And so these, you know, her routines were so good.
Who's the best joke writer of all time, in your opinion?
Oh, I don't think you could name. Honestly, I don't think you could do it. I don't think you could do it because there's guys. There's guys you've never heard of. There's guys
that's why I asked.
It would be really hard to peg it because you get on a run. Like, one of the cool things about, and one of the things that I miss, maybe the thing that I probably miss about having that job, was hanging out with people who do that job on an ongoing basis, stuck on the road, and, you know, some oasis in the middle of bumfuck with, like, you know, if you're lucky, two, and well, if you're super lucky, two, and if you're lucky, one person that you can hang out with is who's on the show with you, who's just brilliantly funny all the time, and you just will laugh constantly.
That's cool.
You know, yeah.
I find stand-ups, like hanging out with stand-ups. I've done Doug Benson's YouTube mm-hmm. show a bunch of times, mm-hmm. and usually the other guests are stand-ups. Mm-hmm. And I'm high while I'm on that show, obviously.
Oh.
So that'll make you a little paranoid. Mm-hmm. But
does Benson know?
I feel high? Pressure. Oh, yeah. I feel pressure to be funny around stand-ups, so I find them very intimidating.
Mm-hmm. As well, you should.
Yeah.
Yes, we're.
It's not that I don't find them unpleasant. Breed. I'm just like, oh shit, I'm not going to be able to keep up with whatever you've got going on.
I think hanging out with comics is when it's competitive, it's not as much fun. Like doing toppers is different from being competitive. There's like you know, just like
tagging, when you're yes anding versus exactly. You're trying to outdo.
Yeah, and I think I probably went through a fairly long, well-coked period of just trying to crush everybody around me, you know, with the very speed and dexterity of my joke production, which generally, you know, quality suffers under those circumstances.
Really? Cocaine?
Yeah, oh, lots of it. Huh. And, yeah.
Who would have known?
When I go to cocaine parties, everybody's so pleasant. And it's not, they're all just, they just want to give and talk about you, and you know.
I did coke for most of my career as a comic and on stage.
Because it's the '80s, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Eighties, and yes, and I was all coked up. So I finally had to stop because one night I looked in the mirror and I was just like, "You're gonna just die. You're just gonna die." Because I was doing like a gram before a show. Like,
Jesus.
I literally had a kickback bit written into the show where I could actually go like, like was literally written as a tag to a joke about a bullfighter or something that I would like be able to like. Actually, like, yeah, it was like I would like move like a bull, like this, like a bull, and it was literally to kick back the big drip about 20 minutes into a 45 minute set. Like, it was literally worked in.
That's a good trick.
Yeah, it was stagecraft.
Yeah.
But I was finally
when
like
you're dedicated,
yeah,
to
yeah. Well, you know, you can't just let it sit there.
You definitely know how to commit.
Yeah, the thing you have that.
His character's through line seemed to be cocaine.
There's a straight line. So I had to stop. I was like, you know, I weighed nothing, and I was just, I wasn't sleeping, and I had to stop. So I stopped. I had to go to meetings. Like, I had to, like, really get in the program. Like, I had to stop.
You had to do that, huh?
Wow. I had to stop.
I've never done it. Have you done cocaine, Shannon?
I have. But, I mean, you know, every once in a blue. I mean, I haven't done it in years.
Right.
But I never did it, like, consistently.
I've been around so many people, like, to this day, who do it.
I never see it anymore, it's for the best.
I literally went to a party, an after party, after a rap party, and it was all... Everybody was on cocaine.
Yeah.
Except for me and another friend of mine who went with
operating
me.
Operating at a normal speed.
And all anyone wanted was for us to do cocaine.
Right.
And I was like, I feel like I'm too old and my heart will explode. I don't want to do cocaine,
right.
But I appreciate that you guys are having a great time. But one thing they all had in common is they all got on a loop of the same conversation. Like, if you got in a conversation, I got in a conversation with one guy, it wasn't unpleasant, except that it was the same thing over and over again. And he was just telling me how great I was, which I love. I love when people tell me how great I am. I thrive on praise.
Well, by the way, you are
great. You're great. You're wonderful.
Thank you. You are great.
Yeah, you're so awesome.
Thank you. Unquestionable.
Thank you very much. See what that did for me? Yeah. I feel great.
Yeah. And I'm not drugged, by the way. This is sincere.
And if Steve Oakes wasn't here, you would be a very special guest.
See, now I... God damn it, Shannon. So, anyway, this one guy, he's just telling me how great I am. And at a certain point, I was like, hey, man, I appreciate this so much. I love this, but you know what? 8 minutes how great I am is all I need. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you, man. And he's like, absolutely. I'm doing this and that. And, oh, that reminds me of this thing that you did that was so great when you did this. It's like...
Here we go.
But you know what's cool about that is he was like, a nice coked up dude, because some people get very aggressive.
I've had those, I've had guys who like sitting in a club actually after a gig. I was sitting with the guy who produced the gig, which, by the way, let me get back to the cocaine story. Remind me. I'm sitting the guy and he's talking. He was zooted. This is in the coke days, and we're heavily zooted. We're still doing lines. It's like late into the morning or whatever it is, and this guy is explaining a fight he had with somebody, and he's saying, so I told this guy, and now he's up in my shit going, right, you motherfucker, I will fucking kick your ass. And he's reenacted, it's a reenactment, right. He's not telling me that,
right,
but he's it's really intense, and I am serving as the other guy. That is my role in this little scene that we're performing.
You're just terrible.
I'm terrible, and I'm zooted myself. So anyway, so I stopped doing
coke.
Do
you want another beer, Shannon?
Actually, do you have any coke?
I have Coca-Cola.
Sure, I'll have one. You're having one.
Yeah.
So I stopped doing the coke, and I'm still doing the act, uh-huh, and I'm moving, you know, my career's doing what it's doing, whatever the hell it's doing. And I'm when quitting, I had to say to myself, it's not the coke. You have to remember, it's not the coke doing this, it's you. The coke does nothing without you. You have all of this. All right, so years go by, and I find that that my output wasn't quite what it was, and I'm not actually performing as well without the coke. So just really, really, really recently, this is so sad. So really recently, somebody gave me Adderall. I took like 10 milligrams of Adderall, and the Adderall hit me very much like coke. It's a very similar kind of buzz.
I've never done Adderall.
Oh, and I just
lit
up.
They just give you that. The doctor will give you that.
No, they don't just give it to you. Trust me. Anyway, I lit up on this Adderall, and all of a sudden I'm firing on 8 cylinders. I'm like everything I was when I stopped doing stand-up, when I stopped doing coke, was suddenly back. All the energy and the thought process and the whole thing was all back. And I'm thinking, literally, as I'm like, my brain is like a fireworks display, and I'm thinking in the back of my head, fuck, it was the coke.
Oh, man.
All the time, it was the coke, it turns out.
Well, it's one of those things, you know, people say, you know, substance abuse is a disease or whatever, and I don't really believe that.
Well, it can kill you, so that's...
No.
It has that in common with disease.
It has things in common with a disease, but I think it's kind of a cop-out to say it's a disease. It puts addiction on the...
On the drug.
On the person who's addicted, really. As opposed to, well, it's an environmental thing. Life is shitty.
Right.
So the drug makes your life better.
Right.
You know, it's like that experiment they did with rats and heroin.
Mm-hmm.
You know about that whole thing?
No, but it was the worst entree I was ever served.
It was really,
that's why I'm vegetarian.
It was,
that after that, it was like no more meat.
And I should have known what I was getting. It was the name of the restaurant.
Yeah. Heroin and rats.
I applied for a job there.
Heroin rats.
Waiting at heroin and rats. Can I get you a fresh needle?
But they did an experiment with rats, and they had rats in cages, right? And then they gave them 2 bottles of water. One was just a bottle of water. The other one was a bottle of water with heroin in it.
Mm-hmm.
Rats in cages would develop an addiction to the heroin water.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would kill them within weeks. So then what they did is they're like, well, wait, we're doing this experiment and all the rats are in cages. So what if we create a paradise, a rat paradise?
Mm-hmm.
So they created an awesome...
Rat-topia.
And the rats hung out with each other, and they got to fuck each other, and they got to forage for their food together. You know, it's like it was a rat paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Same 2 bottles. Bottle of actual water, bottle of heroin water.
Mm-hmm.
The rats in rat paradise would sometimes try the heroin water, but they would never go back to it.
Interesting.
Oh, that's very interesting.
They only went to the water. They only wanted the real water because they were perfectly happy.
Interesting. The rats who tried the heroin water actually returned the bottle for the deposit.
We don't need this.
We can learn from that.
But that's, to me, that's an interesting take on addiction. It's not a disease. It's a coping mechanism.
Right.
And the shittier your situation.
Right.
So whatever was going on with you in the 80s, which is like a lot of people were doing a lot of cocaine in the 80s, but you know, why? It was an environmental thing.
No, there was
Reagan was in office.
There was nothing shitty about my life. I'm not joking. There was really nothing shitty about my life. I would wish that everybody could have, you know, and survive the life that I had in the 80s. Honestly, it was a 100% blast. There was a couple of, you know, I was auditioning for shit and not getting jobs. There was, you know, there's always pits.
Yeah, yeah.
But the peaks were almost constant. I was operating at a pretty high level of happiness throughout these United States of America.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, back in the 80s, too, coke was so prevalent. Like, you know, I wouldn't...
Well, and in stand-up, everybody was
Robin and it was a great time to be a stand-up. Yeah. Like, in general, like, it was the person, it was the job to have... And it was the drug to have, and it was the life to have.
Yeah, I started dabbling right after that whole thing crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a bitter environment.
Tough. I slid out. I slid right into, like, it was my it's like I was surfing, and the wave just slid me gently onto the sand, and I actually just strolled off the board and into a writing job. It was very nice. Even that was, like, easy and smooth. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, it's no fun. That's an interesting thing. You're a shit interviewer. If you had like a great life, everything was good.
No, it's refreshing to hear.
I mean, things went great.
I'm happy to hear that.
Met my wife. We settled down.
We still like each other.
We had our 26th anniversary yesterday.
Congratulations.
Literally
Cheers.
Yesterday. Thank you very much. 26 years.
And ago. You're turning 16.
31 together, actually, completely. And I'm turning 16 next week or
That's
whatever.
That's crazy.
Oh, fuck. That's so crazy.
Now, 60 is still young, but you look so young. I'm thinking maybe we need to start doing coke because maybe that
preserved me.
Yeah.
I actually didn't age from like 86 to 94. I was literally frozen.
Yeah.
So like that's why my gums are so youthful.
I was going to mention that. Yeah. I can't stop staring at your gums.
Yeah, youthful pink gums, thanks to preserving
them. Staring at your gums.
At your youthful pink gums.
Have you ever known anyone with like a gummy smile? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And they smile, their lip like completely exposes
and their teeth look really small.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're down the bottom of the gums.
Yeah.
They're hanging out down the
bottom. Does it make you recoil at all? Do you have to like hold something down?
Oh, we're talking about...
I have to hold it down. Like when I get a gummy smile, I want to...
No, I just kind of do like a little bit of a double take. I mean, an almost jerk back, but it's more like, just like, is that really good? But I try not to let it show because I don't want them to...
How do you not let a double take? It's like the tiniest...
As long as you don't make the noise.
No, that's it. That's the key. You don't make the noise. Well, I don't like go like that, but you know, I'll notice like my eyes might kind of widen. I've never been called out on it. Okay, whether or not they know that's what I'm doing, I don't know. But I never want to be in a position where I have to.
What happened?
Like,
what's wrong?
I'm just
what's
staring
wrong?
At your, you know,
I'm sorry.
Youthful pink gums.
I saw you make a double take. It's my gums, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Damn you, gums. I have kind of a double standard on that, to be honest with you, because on people, it's a rather interesting look, but on horses, I find it quite fetching.
Because
you notice that a horse, when it opens its mouth, it's almost all gum in there, and that looks rather...
But all horses are like that.
That's
so
true,
it's like
it's consistent.
You're used to... You're, that's what
Imagine
you think
if a horse
is...
opened its mouth and it had a gum line like a human. That would be very upsetting.
Weird.
That would be
and
very
similar
weird.
Teeth to a human.
Yeah, that
would
weird.
Be a big double
very,
take. That would
maybe that's what
mind.
It is.
It's I would like, just throw the carrot.
Yeah.
The gummy thing is too horsey. That's the thing.
It has a certain horsiness
that,
to it.
Yeah, you look at it and you're like, oh, I've seen a horse do that.
But I've seen some attractive people with visible gum lines.
No, see, now you fucked me over because... Now, because I've never thought of when I see a gummy smile on a person, I never equated it to a horse. So now, the next, I'm going to see somebody with a mouth like that today, probably now.
I know.
And I'm going to immediately do a bad double take and be like, you look like a horse. I mean, I'm not going to say that.
Or you're going to say, what's up, Mr. Ed? Or something like that.
Start carrying sugar. Start carrying sugar cubes.
Oh, God.
Every time someone who's gummy smiles at you, I just want you to just go, hey, what's up, Seabiscuit?
Oh, God. Hey, what's up, Hey, Secretariat!
You know, this is kind of good.
How's
because there's
hanging?
So few areas where bullying is involved. You know, so it's gotten to very scant to where
no,
you can actually
No, we can't make fun
that.
Of it. The only accent you can do anymore is the Italian one. That's the only one.
Is that true?
Like the stereotypical, you can get away with it. That's a spicy meatball. Yeah. You can get away with that, but it's technically racist. But that's the only one that's okay. You
like can't, Italian you, Italian, not like New York Italian.
Not New York.
Hey, what are you doing? You can still do that, right?
No, yeah, you can do New York. I think you can do New York, or you can do a Boston accent, I guess.
Yeah, if you can, by the way, you know, Bostonians have a real bug up their ass about actors doing Boston accents.
Yeah, I
because,
know.
Because it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. Nobody does it right.
Nobody, very few actors really nail a Boston accent. And somehow they keep putting shows there. So these actors have to do these, and they and not hiring Bostonians.
But I am from Massachusetts,
right.
And I don't have,
you don't have it.
An accent.
At all.
And there's no reason to do one.
You actually sound Nebraskan, like you have like Midwestern.
I get well. That's probably because my dad was a Air Force brat, so okay. He grew up in the Midwest and everywhere else.
Yeah.
But my mom has more of a like when she gets drunk, she has more of a Massachusetts accent.
There's logic to that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you know when people who you know from the South who don't have a Southern accent when they drink a little they start drawling on you. You know, same
or if you're around like I'm from Long Island, so if I'm around Long Islanders, like I it becomes some other. Mike,
Long Island.
Long Island.
Long Island.
Long Island. Long Island. I start saying sister. The sister is the easy one to fall into. Draw instead of draw. You know, I say draw.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Stuff yeah, like I do that too when I am surrounded by people with a particular accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I'm with my old high school buddies, I'll start saying wicked awesome.
Right.
Shit like that.
Right. But
wicked awesome. Wicked has hung on. Such a Massachusetts thing.
Wicked has really hung on. You know, a lot of words.
But wicked awesome is very specific.
That's very specific, yeah.
Like Massachusetts was into wicked, but it was wicked awesome. That was the phrase.
Wicked awesome.
Everybody hung on to that.
And it still is in use?
In my generation, Gen X.
Wicked something say, probably.
Yeah,
still
yeah.
Is, right?
You
wicked
hang
wasn't
on to
going
the,
away.
You hang on to the stuff that, you know, like I still hear people say hella from the Bay Area.
Right.
Our generation, I don't know.
Cool has somehow made it right through like the 40s.
Oh, yeah. Cool is never going away.
It's amazing how cool you'll hear kids say cool and you go like, my God, kids have been saying cool since the jazz age. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And give me some skin. People still do say
that
all the time.
Give me some skin. You hear that all the time.
That's not true.
Yep, I remember Solid Jackson has made it from 1967. Still with us every day. People say Solid Jackson.
Okay, well, this has been a delight. Thank you for coming, Steve. Please come again.
Sure. Of course, I'm all out of stories, though, so I'm going to have to, next time I'm here, I'm lying.
Just thanking Steve. Why is it...
Yes, and I was going to get to you.
Oh, jeez. Why am I last, though? I should get the biggest thank you.
Because today, you're not the special guest. You're not the specialist guest.
That's so weird.
I feel like I crashed your party. I'm sorry.
It's messed up.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shannon, for having me on your show.
I'm honored to have you on the show. Steve, this has been so awesome. Let's come back. And happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Service bullshit.